Good morning. Welcome to the First Unitarian Universalist Church of Austin. My name is Amy Bennett, and I am your lay leader today. Well, it's a beautiful Sunday morning to be here, and we welcome you all. We are an intentionally inclusive congregation, and we welcome persons of all religions, ethnic and racial origins, sexual orientations, political convictions, abilities, and other circumstances. Please join me in affirming our mission statement at First UU Church of Austin, found in your order of service or on the wall to your left. At First Unitarian Universalist Church of Austin, we gather in community to nourish souls, transform lives, and do justice.
I'm so happy to be with you guys today. I was last in this spot maybe about 12 or 13 years ago, and I was about 20 years old. So it's much of a homecoming to me. So thank you for having me. If you'll please join me in the spirit of prayer and meditation. Spirit of life and of love, God of many names, you are recognizable in all acts of loving kindness. May we carry the spirit of renewal, of renewed compassion in our dealings with ourselves, our families and friends, and our co-inhabitants of this earth. In the spirit of compassion, we pray for peace. In the spirit of peace, we pray for justice. May we, as liberal religious people, exercise humility along with our perseverance and determination, managing our self-righteousness in our quest for righteousness, yet keeping faith in the struggle for justice and standing in solidarity with the oppressed. We also keep in our hearts those who are hurting, among us and beyond, known to us and unknown. We hold these and the unspoken prayers of our hearts together in this sacred silence. This is The Broken Buddha by your lovely Meg Barnhouse, which she'll be joining you shortly, I hear, and I'm very excited that you have called her. I have a photograph in my online art collection titled Broken Buddha. It shows the lap of a painted statue. One graceful hand has broken off and is resting on the sole of an upturned foot. I'm trying to figure out why I'm so drawn to this image. The enlightened one, as imperfect, cracked, and chipped. Maybe that's how my enlightenment feels. It's not all that shiny anymore. A piece or two may have gotten knocked off. The broken Buddha says I don't have to be scared of being the way I am. As a practicing therapist, I met a lot of people who trusted in therapy. They would speak as if you could get help for any situation and handle it with your head held high, your intellect clear, and your feelings in good order. If you get healthy enough, you're supposed to be able to go through even a nasty divorce with peace in your heart. If something disturbs you, you should get help. The broken Buddha tells me that sometimes agony is appropriate. The part of me I'm least proud of imagines that this Buddha's hand detached when he reached out to someone who said something on the order of everything happens the way it should and slapped them silly. In a dream workshop I was leading, an older woman was sharing her grief, having lost her son in his 20s to melanoma. They hadn't seen it because it was under his hair. A woman across the table tilted her head and spoke in that breathy voice that some people think makes them sound more spiritual. Her eyes went wide, too, and she didn't blink. Have you ever thought about why he might have wanted to draw that suffering into his life? why you might have wanted to draw it into yours. The broken Buddha tells me that life is not neat. Life is gorgeous and horrific and beyond understanding. We may create certain situations, draw certain things, but other suffering strikes like a tiger from the tall grass, snatching us from one life into another without cause or warning. I meditate on the broken hand of the Buddha, and it comforts me. It tells me that the spiritual moves in and through the cracks and gaps, that it's wild and doesn't make sense. It sits with you, even though something that can't be fixed by intelligence or kindness or love, even through something, rather. Curious about the statue, I learned that the broken hand is in the Karuna Mudra, the shape used for warding off demons. The enlightened one is still whole, one of the comments under the photos reads. Someone was made nervous by the broken Buddha's hand. The one who wrote that comment wants it to be true, but he doesn't know. Maybe you can be enlightened and broken too. Sometimes I feel like I understand so much that I can be a lot of help to people. Other times my mind is blank and there is nothing in my mind or heart to say, but I'm sorry. I want to reach out, but my hand is lying in my lap, still in the shape of warding off demons of fear and illness, financial terrors and loss. I can't do anything with it. The broken Buddha says he knows how I feel. Our hearts beat together for a time, and we are both strengthened. Last year, I lived in Pasadena, California, where I completed a 9-month ministerial joint internship with Troop and Neighborhood Unitarian Universalist Churches. And then I also stayed on to serve as summer minister to Neighborhood Church. During the last meeting of my internship committee before we broke for summer, we were going over my final evaluation when one of the members of my committee made a joke about how I had done a little bit of everything during this internship. Preaching, weddings, memorials, etc., and that all that was missing was an exorcism. I laughed and I answered, "No, that was last year." There were some chuckles, and we went on with our business at hand until about 10 minutes later when one committee member, in delayed amazement, asked, "Wait a minute, did you say you did exorcisms last year? I have to hear about this." See, I spent the year before my internship as a hospital chaplain in a large hospital in San Francisco. Now, I jokingly refer to them as exorcisms, but twice in that role, I was asked to either assist in or perform a ceremony that would cleanse or clear a space of negativity that was believed to be impeding and also counteracting the healing process. The first request came when I was on my first rotation, 6 months on one of the pediatric floors. The patient was a preschool-age child with a life-threatening illness that had been in and out of, mostly in, of the hospital since soon after birth. I'd come to know she and her mother quite well. Both were monolingual Spanish speakers and were Catholic. One morning I walked into the patient's room for just what I thought would be a routine visit, check-in kind of thing, and I found her mother unusually upset. This child had had really bad days before, and her mother, though, was known to remain quite optimistic and calm at best in front of her child, if nothing else. But this, I knew that there was something different about this day. She told me that one of the nurses had informed her that they were about to transfer them from one room to another on the floor, and she did not want this to happen. After going back and forth between the nurse's station and the patient's mother a few times in an attempt to resolve the conflict, I learned that the mother feared being in that particular room that they were about to transfer them to. Since the last time her daughter was there, she had dropped from the best she had been doing in months to a near brush with death. And then it only improved her health when they were moved back out of that room. She improved dramatically and instantly. The mother had spoken to another mother on the floor who had told her of a similar experience she had had with her child in that same room that she was being transferred to. Together, they formed the conclusion that there were bad spirits in that room, that maybe a child had died there in the past. After she realized that there was no other option and that her daughter would indeed be moving to that dreaded room, she told me that she would be comfortable with it only if a certain bilingual priest who had become a family friend could come and bless the room and get rid of that bad spirit. Well, he wasn't working that day. He was out of town. So I called the on-call priest, and I jokingly said, "Hey, Father, I've got an exorcism for you." "Oh, wonderful," he said. Later that day, the three of us met in the feared room, and he sprinkled holy water, and I prayed, and prayed while I did my best to translate in my broken Spanish. She was satisfied, and her daughter stayed in that room several more times over the next few months of my rotation with no consequence. The second request came during my six-month rotation on the floor that housed labor and delivery and the neonatal ICU or NICU units. I was paged to come up and provide support to a family whose baby was being removed from life-sustaining care. He was a couple of months old, and he had already had way too many ups and downs. I was expecting the page, as the extubation had been planned for a few days, but these deaths, they just don't ever get easy. In her grief the following day, the baby's primary nurse made a comment to me about how that bed space is just no good. He was doing fine until he moved there. We've just lost too many babies there. A nearby nurse overheard and she agreed. "There's just bad energy there," she said. So a spiritual need was being presented. So I asked them if they would like my help in leading them in some sort of ritual to bring peace to the ICU bay. I had no idea what I was offering them. But seeing how excited they became at my suggestion, I knew I had better figure it out fast. Later on, during my break, a couple of other nurses came up to me and half-jokingly asked if it was true that we were going to do an exorcism in that bad bed space. But through their nervous laughter and sarcasm, there was a sense of necessity. I answered yes, but that I was calling it a cleansing ceremony, and they said simply, "Thank you. We really need it." A time was arranged for the next day. About 6 to 8 nurses showed up. A group of doctors were doing rounds a couple of isolates over, and I walked around the room with an unlit bundle of sage, sprinkled water around from a plastic vial marked holy water that I had found in our supply room, and I said these words: "With this water, we cleanse this space and make it whole. May any negativity or negative energy return from whence it came. May healing love fill this space and dispel all despair. May all patients, their loved ones, and their caregivers move about this space in peace and harmony." Then we prayed together that the space may be a place of healing for the babies, their families, and their caregivers. During the 3 to 5 minute ceremony, some nurses began to cry. I asked them about it afterward, and they said that they were just thinking about all of the babies that had died in that spot, and they were remembering them. One of the attending neonatologists approached me later and said that she was glad that we had done something like that. In the weeks that followed, nurses reported that babies were now doing well in that bed space. After hearing these two stories, my internship committee urged me to consider preaching on them. There is a sermon in there, I was told. I knew they were right, but it was tough to find just where the sermon was. Like myself, I suspect that many of us in this room are agnostic about things like negative energy or bad spirits. We don't quite know what to make of it all. Others may fully believe that a space can contain negativity that requires removal, and others may still be firm in their disbelief. Yet how many of us have our own little rituals or ways in which we exercise our lives of stuff that we're ready to be done with? Have you ever given the house a good top-to-bottom scrubbing after a bout of stress or disorder in your life? Or decided to replace a piece of furniture that you and your ex bought together well before it was practical or economical to do so? Have you ever gotten a new haircut or moved to a new neighborhood, town, or state just because it was time for a change? Have you ever gone through a period of grief or hit one of life's many potholes and come out on the other side of it, wishing your life were just like one of those etch-a-sketch drawing tablets that you could just shake hard and return to a blank screen, start again? I know I have. There's something universal about that narrative. At some point or other, we all hope for and find ways of wiping our proverbial slates clean and beginning again. Sometimes this happens with physical objects or places. We are sensory creatures, after all, who ascribe memories of emotions as well as sensations to places and to things. If I asked you all right now to describe for me, to think about your favorite article of clothing, the one that's nearly threadbare from frequent use, tell me about it, there's no doubt that there would be stories included in its description, its physical description. We tend to cling to things, people, and places that bring us happy memories and pleasant emotions and feel a sense of renewal when we leave behind the stuff that does not, regardless of whether or not we attribute it to negative energy or spirits ill at rest. Yet, despite discovering this universal truth in these exorcism stories, it didn't seem to me as if beginning again, wiping the slate clean, or clearing the air was all these two anecdotes was about. Yes, there did exist a deep spiritual need for renewal in both cases. But also present was the need for compassion. In both instances, I was able to act as both an agent of compassion and a witness to it, and so blessed to have the opportunity to be able to do so. The mother asked for someone to understand the fear of losing her daughter, to allow her space to express that, and to honor her request for prayer. After all, she had held it together so many times before in the past. She wanted to be taken seriously. The good-humored priest and I were able to provide that for her. When the nurses asked me to clear the NICU bed space of negativity, they were also asking to have a space to grieve together in a work environment that did not always allow time to do that. I remember in weekly interdisciplinary rounds, sometimes we would come to a baby's name as we would go down the list and check in on the status of each patient. And It would be a baby who had died the night before, and it would be said that, oh, unfortunately, she's been transferred to the 16th floor late last night. Everyone knew that the hospital only had 15 floors. It wasn't that they didn't care. It was that they did care, so much so that pausing to grieve with one another would take time away from the other patients when every minute counts. That day, the day of our little cleansing ceremony, cleansing ritual, they compassionately gave themselves and each other permission to shed a few tears for just a few minutes in the middle of a hectic 14-hour shift. In both cases, compassion was being requested as an assistant in both physical and emotional healing. Just as we have basic physical needs of food, shelter, clothing, and so on, we have basic spiritual needs. Each one of us, doesn't matter if we call ourselves religious or not, it exists. We are spiritual creatures. Among them, among these needs, are the need to love and to be loved, to care and to be cared for. There have been numerous studies conducted, including many that were largely federally funded. I'll let you guess which administration paid for that. that have explored the correlation between prayer and improved healing. Some religious bodies even claim that prayer alone, one means of demonstrating compassion, can bring about emotional or physical healing. As suspected, none of these studies have been conclusive. All have remained inconclusive. I mean, after all, how do you measure the intangible? And most would agree that healing is best achieved with compassion working in tandem with other interventions. But without offering compassion to ourselves and receiving compassion from others, the healing process is always, always complicated and extended. Think back with me once more, if you will, to those times when you've been able to exhale, wipe the slate clean, and start again. What happened in order for you to get to that place? Who listened to your story along the way? What did you do for yourself that allowed the time necessary for pause, for reflection? Who gave you the pep talks that helped you to trust and to believe the pep talks that you gave yourself? My guess is that healing compassion is one of the secrets of longevity. It's certainly a key to happiness and a sense of belonging. How many times have we heard others say or have said to ourselves something like, if it weren't for so-and-so or my friends or the people at this church, at such and such time in my life, I don't know how I would have ever. We need others to give a damn, and we need to give a damn about others. It's a necessity in our wounded, broken lives and in our wounded, broken world. The broken Buddha reminds us that in all of our messy, wounded brokenness, we all have the ability to help heal each other and ourselves with compassion, exorcising any demons that happen across our paths. As we part in peace, let's give thanks for all of the healing compassion we've given and received throughout our lives, and that we will continue to give and receive each day. Go in peace.
This is a presentation of the First Unitarian Universalist Church of Austin. For more information, visit our website at www.austinuu.org.